Can you all hear me clearly? Is that good? Okay, I have nothing to disclose either financially, except I'm worried. And let me also just preface this by saying, even though I now work at the New York Academy, this is based on some research I did when I was getting my master's in public health recently. So they have no responsibility for this. How many of you came to this conference worried about shopping as a public health issue for older adults? Anyone? Well, in 15 minutes, tell me if you are worried, or if you can tell me why I should not be worried, because I really am. And I hope I can start to make these points clearly. I'm going to kind of flip through how I got interested, but I've been particularly interested in the issue of social isolation and loneliness risks with aging, and I'm focusing on the urban environment because I live in New York City and I wouldn't know what to do in the rural area anyway. The literature on social isolation as a health risk, both generally and for the older population, is growing and fairly robust, both in terms of showing that social connectedness, social networks, social support really are predictors of a positive aging experience and good health, and the absence of those predict poor health. The loneliness data is also fairly robust, and I think it's worth noting that the peak ages for loneliness is when we're teenagers, when we are seeking to establish some identity in the world and some way of connecting, and in our older age, when I would suggest we are losing our identities and finding it hard to attain networks and support. And if we look at the pathways to social engagement for adults, I would actually suggest that these last two social groups in virtual overlap for a lot of people, particularly younger people. But when you look at what happens as we age, and this is Myra touched on some of these, the macro level social norms really tend to destroy some of our social networks. Age-graded transitions like retirement and often the loss of spouse and peers through either death or illness, compromised social networks, the changing family structures. The neighborhood's there, but it's changing also. And because we have no socially valued role for older adults other than grandparent, there's no ready-made way to gain social access. So we can always think about retail therapy, which is a great American solution for emotional coping strategies, as we all know. And seriously, it has been studied in the literature, particularly for older people in the suburbs, as a way to facilitate a sense of connectedness and engagement. There is very little data on it in terms of urban environments, and I was kind of interested in that, but even more so, I was interested in Ray Oldenburg's concept of third places, those places that they're not home, they're not work, they're a third place, a kind of neutral public space which can spontaneously allow for the generation of new contacts across the usual boundaries of social class or gender or age or so forth. It's why some of us hang out in Starbucks for a long time for no apparent reason. And I thought that third places might be particularly important for older adults who have lost some of these other networks, like business networks and so forth. I'd also would just like to mention that Paula Gardner, who's at actually, she just left Hunter College, but she did a wonderful paper looking at the use of public spaces by older adults in Canada. And her work really reminded me that the right to occupy public space is in itself an act of social legitimacy. So what I decided to think about this in terms of New York City and ask the question, are retail stores in the city viable sources of social networking and support for older adults? And I decided to do that by comparing older adults' experiences against the perceptions of retailers and marketers. And I used a mixed methods qualitative approach, in addition to a lit review looking at business, social science, and gerontology literature. I conducted two focus groups with adults ages 65 to 94. This was in a targeted neighborhood. One group lives in a senior residence. The other group are people who live in public or private apartments in New York City. And I asked them to talk about shopping experiences, and this had Columbia's IRB approval stamped all over it. I also conducted informant interviews with people in retail and marketing, including senior vice presidents of human resources, senior sales associates, CEOs and retail executives of major chains like Sears and Macy's, and marketing experts on customer segmentation, and also grocery store owners, pet store owners, and lots of people at different stores. I observed a lot of different stores as well. So let me tell you about the findings. First, I would say that their experiences of all the rest, they are relying mostly on local retail stores to a very significant extent. That tracks with the literature. They're also spending a fair amount, even though poverty is an issue. Older people are spending things, too. Did you know that grandparents spend $2 trillion a year in the United States, by the way? Neither did the retailers I talked to. But when I asked them to describe their experiences, almost all of them cited multiple examples of behaviors that they identified as ageist. And they included things like speaking louder as if they think we're deaf, or speaking very nicely as if we're children, or speaking very simply as if we're cognitively impaired. In addition to those kinds of exaggerated behaviors, there are lots of examples of being ignored. And lest you think that's just lousy New York service, which I thought it might be, they gave me examples, and I observed this as well, of, for example, an 80-year-old woman and her 50-year-old adult daughter going into a store. The 80-year-old woman asks the sales clerk a question, and the clerk answers the 50-year-old daughter. And I observed that quite a lot. They associated this treatment particularly with younger employees, and I'm going to come back to that in a couple of minutes. And I think one of the things I want to say very clearly, that from the tone and the expression of what they said, these retail experiences hurt. These negative retail experiences also triggered a sense of global feeling of devaluation and a sense of feeling invisible with age, and it led into comments from people in my focus groups of things like, well, where's our project runway? Where are the designers for us? Why does AARP only care about 50-year-olds and not about us? There was a real global sense that came through loud and clear. And I should also add that this only came through after we'd been talking for a while. Initially, they started out conversations saying everything was fine. About 20 minutes into it, it wasn't so fine. They also looked at talked about the physical elements of stores, and I bring this up particularly because in kind of aging circles, including at the New York Academy where I work, we look at kind of age-friendly businesses, and there's a little bit of a schematic that we're all talking about of having large font size and bright lighting and clear aisles and all these things as being important. Well, these adults did talk about those, but they talked about them very much in terms of the message it sent to them about whether they were welcome or not. That almost seemed to be more important than the actual features themselves. One woman said that, you know, she was convinced the popular computer store was uninterested in her, even though she's in there buying things a lot, and she cited the overly bright lights and the loud music as a sign of that. One other thing was the issue of bathroom access, which was perhaps the most emotional issue to come up in the discussions. And because of urinary frequency and urge incontinence and so forth, it was affecting the ability and willingness of a lot of people in these groups to go out. They were thinking about in their minds, well, do I want to go here? What's the access to bathrooms at these stores? It was constraining physical activity. And along with that, there was a sense of humiliation and embarrassment and indignation when they were talking about it. There were some examples when they asked someone if they could use the bathroom, and when it was refused and it was always by a younger person, they were just enraged and humiliated. So that was the kinds of experiences I was hearing from them. Talk to marketers and retailers, a completely different universe. I'm going to talk. They were unaware of any differential sales treatment at all. Totally. And they explained to me why that could not happen, because they trained their sales staff to be friendly and courteous to everyone, which, as we all know, worked so well for racism. And it's an issue I'm going to come back to later, but they really were, there were a couple of, they happened to be women, but they were actually very surprised by what I was saying later in our conversations, and they were quite interested. But generally, the response I got was, well, I just don't think that's a problem. They also, and I think this is more pernicious, they were misinformed about the older adult market, and they had stereotypical images. Despite 20 years of studies in the business literature that repeatedly show that older adults are equally willing to try new brands, I kept hearing, well, older adults just don't buy new brands. They're very fixed in their ways. That's why we focus things on younger adults. Then they'd say, well, they're poor. They don't spend money. That's why we focus on younger adults. And that's not what the data shows either. I actually had a man who was about my age, maybe younger, might have been as young as 50, who had been vice president of Macy's, who said to me, old people just won't go into Starbucks and pay that much for a cup of coffee. And when I showed him data about who was actually buying things, he just rejected it and said, well, that data must be wrong. So, and this is a really bright guy. He's teaching at a major business school in New York, and I'm citing it because I think it's a common attitude, not because I'm trying to knock him. So I think one of the big takeaways was that ageism trumps capitalism. That here we are in a recession, here you've got a consumer market that is actually loyal and rewards good service, that shops locally, that isn't shopping online to a great extent, and they're perfect for the kind of marketing, relational marketing that's the business paradigm now, and they're being ignored. They're also not being hired. I also explored the attitudes of retailers and marketers towards older employees and what was going on in terms of the demographics of staff. And the average retail age, they told me, of their staff was under 26 for sales clerks. Store managers were 28 to 33. So you can imagine how many 32-year-old store managers really were going to hire a 60-year-old person to work in the store. So that kind of helped explain some of the structural barriers. The odd thing was that when I asked them about older employees, the responses were all very positive. Older employees compared to younger employees, they said, had a great work ethic. They showed up. You know, I would get stories of, oh, the young people, they text in their resignations, and they don't show up, and they do this, and the older employees really are terrific. And I'd say, well, are you planning to hire more? And they said, no. So there's this real interesting disconnect going on. They're not motivated to hire older adults, even though some of them were aware that older customers like seeing older workers in the store, which leads me to the last major finding from this, which is that they're actually afraid if they attract older customers or too many older customers that they'll be stigmatized as a store for the elderly. And if you think about the research that was done in the civil rights era in terms of how many African-American customers does it take to be seen as a black store, I don't know if you remember that or I'm dating myself, but I think it was something like it took two African-Americans for 45 white people for it to start to get a concern among business people. So we don't have that data on older adults, but I'm just saying there's a tendency among retailers and marketers to think very much about how this is going to affect what they think of as their target audience. And I think that's a factor. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. There's very little literature about this. So, are there age-friendly businesses? I actually found several. I heard of several from my participants. And the thing that fascinated me was that none of the stores that they named and none of the stores I observed had the things that I'm actually working to promote at the New York Academy of Medicine. You know, they weren't talking about the large font size and the clear aisles and all those wonderful things. They were just stores that had great customer service. It's just good customer service, as my uncle, who was a locksmith, used to tell me to always give. And one was a local grocery store. One was a local pet food store. There were a couple of others. And I'm just going to say a couple of things about the pet food store because it was so striking. I observed that three times because people would walk in with their dogs, and the dogs were often greeted by names, and people would kind of stop and hang out, and as opposed to other stores, there was the only place where there were spontaneous intergenerational conversations among the customers, and people were kind of hanging out, and it was a place that the conversations were not only about what they were buying and have you tried this and so forth, but about the neighborhood. Something like, well, what happened over there on the Third Street? What happened to that street light? They were starting to open up, and people would even talk about politics. I thought it was a place where it really did facilitate a kind of social engagement and sense of community connectedness. That was very vital. So my conclusions to this project was that urban retail stores, in fact, do have the potential to serve as a social nexus for older adults and can facilitate connectedness, and it maybe even encourage more physical activity. People feel comfortable to go and hang out in places. But the major obstacles are ageist behaviors and attitudes, including general age stereotypes and retail-specific age stereotypes. The reason I think it's a public health issue is that if you look at the body of literature that was pioneered by Becca Levy and her colleagues at Yale about the impact of implicit and explicit ageism, it's really clear that just as the larger body of research examining the health impact of stigma and prejudice show, that having those environmental cues that trigger negative age-related experiences have all kinds of physical effects as well as mental effects. It increases cardiovascular hyperreactivity. It decreases speed and gait speed. It impairs cognitive performance. There's lots of memory tests with this, and even impacts mortality. Even worse, these are behaviors that are enacted in public. And I think we have to think about what does it mean to have this public devaluation of older adults. There's a wonderful study by Ryan Anderson Grenier in which they found that young adults who witnessed inattentive or dismissive behavior by staff people to older customers or disabled customers blamed the victims and thought they were somehow undeserving of better treatment. When these same young adults were shown just good, courteous service, they had no negative interpretations. So these behaviors model and normalize a very pernicious thing. Can we change it? Well, retailers and marketers have shown a glacial resistance to change. So I am skeptical that even educating retailers about the spending capability of older adults in and of itself will be sufficient. I think we're going to need more age-diverse workforces. We're going to need to change attitudes. There are some initiatives going on. I think based on history, we're going to need something much more aggressive like what happened with Denny's and racism in the early 1990s. I'm going to close for questions and just say that there are many limitations to the study, primarily that the sample wasn't representative of the target neighborhood. And even though I'm talking about the public health of older adults, I actually did not make any health assessment of these adults. And let me close by thanking all the people who were remarkably generous in sharing their experiences with me and to my advisor, Dr. Adela, who supported me in going into areas that were not traditional for the public health school at Mailman. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Any differences relative to sex?
You know, actually, there were, and I didn't have a large enough group to know if it was true. I looked at some other data as well. And there was another difference. People who are still working or working part-time at first were more apt to kind of look at the poor training of younger employees and weren't quite ready to take it as personally until they got further into the discussion, whereas the older adults who were, you know, maybe 75 and up were feeling much less empowered to talk about it. Men were more apt to think that it depends how you act. He said, you know, if you treat them well, they'll treat you well. But then as we probe beneath the surface, they seem to be getting a lot of the same behaviors, but they were kind of saying, well, she had a bad day. So they seem to have better defenses against it. Yes, sir.
Having a certain number of years, I might have that really drives me up the wall, are lounge restaurants. Why is it necessary to have background music that everybody has to talk over? Surely young people have to shout over the music just as my wife and I do. And is there any research that shows that there is a reasonable number of people who avoid restaurants that are loud?
It's a great question. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to look. Thanks.
It's for the staff. The staff control the music, and they like it loud, and it is all about staff.
Well, actually, you know, my respondents thought that the loud music was a way of keeping them out, that it was partly to geared to a young crowd.
It also moves people through.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to sit and linger because you can't talk. It's great for veterans.
All right. Thank you.